You've tapped or clicked in to College Volleyball Weekly on Viral Volley Media. Now here's your host, Rob on mic.
Hey, good day, everyone. Welcome back to College Volleyball Weekly, Men's Top 20. We are in week 13 and a phenomenal play, even though it's been spring break and some teams are idle this week. We're going to go reverse order. Jay Hossick of George Mason, Brad Rothschild of UC San Diego, Theo Edwards of San Fernando State University, otherwise known as CSUN, and Dan Friend of the Cool Pilot Guys of Lewis. Big week ahead. As always, we start with the elephant in the room. I'm going to start with Brad because I think mine and his will be the easiest. What was your week like, Brad? Because I think if I'm right, you've been pretty much off.
Yeah, we've had finals here, so we've been off, which has basically looked like some small group work and some individual work for guys who knock out their finals early on in the week. And then most guys, we actually had a few guys who still had finals on Saturday morning. Finals are done now, and we have the week off of school with spring break, which allows us to have plenty of time to train and watch the video and get better and be ready for practice and weights today.
And that was the same for Irvine this week as they were off. So let's jump over to the big two-time winner of the week, Dan Friend and his Lewis Flyers.
Yeah, I'll take two wins on the weekend. So no complaints by me, just so you know. But first time traveling down to Queens, and Jeremy's got a good group, and never been there before. And Charlotte's always beautiful. I've been to Charlotte, but nice university. And he's got some players. They were out. We talk about injuries. Their opposite, who's kind of one of their main guys, I think it's Brinkman. So he was unfortunately not in it, but it was good. It was good volleyball. And like I said, I was proud of the guys on a road trip, getting a couple wins. And so, but again, you see the Miva melee, you know what I mean? So it's like, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, but McHenry gets beat by Lindenwood. McHenry goes and beats Loyola. Ohio State beats Ball State. Purdue, Fort Wayne. Some guy has 38 kills, but they still can't beat Ball State without Patrick Rogers in the lineup. You know what I mean? And so, and then Quincy almost gets Lindenwood, and it's 13-10 in the fifth, and Quincy's up, and Lindenwood comes back and wins 15-13. And so, like, a lot of good volleyball in the Miva. I think it's going to come down to the end here to see who's where. If we don't have like 9-team tie or something like that, what's going on? So
I love the Miva ambassador and you trying to take the focus off of your team there, Dan. It's like, well, we don't want any of that, so let's just talk about everyone else. But you know, one of your guys is having a solid week, Max Rocky, actually solid 2 weeks. You know, he 23 kills, I believe that was night one. But he's been performing really well for you guys.
Yeah, he's been really good. He's been putting up some great numbers this year. He's, you know, hitting his best kills, hitting percentage, digs, everything. So he certainly is an anchor for us, and he had a good weekend for us, and certainly anchored the offense and our passing. You know, does a bunch of different things for us, which is really good. And so he was pretty good. We had a new guy in the lineup, Wes Middle. I think he hit like six hundred or so the second night. And so throwing our new middle in there to get some things done. So that was great to see by him in terms of that. And so it was good.
Dan always looking for the future. Let's jump over to George Mason and Jay Hossick, who brought in the Pioneers of Tusculum.
We also went 2-0, Rob, just in case you're curious.
I was watching them. I actually watched them on my drive, safely, of course.
Yeah, Tusculum is the last weekend we have this year of non-conference matches. We have one more match next Friday against Sacred Heart, and then obviously we have Princeton starting back up in the IBA. But, you know, we're still dealing with the injury bug. We still have a bunch of guys that are kind of getting back into the swing of things, and this weekend was an opportunity to get some new guys some playing time and see what they could do in the heat of battle. And it was a good weekend for us, 3-0 sweeps on both nights. And Tusculum is one of those programs that's relatively new. They're trying to find their way and figure out how they're going to go moving forward. Their head coach, Brian Buckius, is doing the best he can with what he's got. And, you know, they're a good looking group of guys. They're just, you know, a little experience at the higher levels, but I was proud of my guys, a couple of good wins. And, you know, this week's going to be pretty important. The other match of note in the IBA, Princeton beat NJIT in four, the Battle Sopranos. That was a good win for Sam and his group. Penn State was idle this week, and Harvard beat Merrimack, I believe, was the team they beat. And, you know, we're getting right back into it. So while everybody else is on spring break, we're getting back into EIBA play. And, you know, not kind of like the MEVA, but not unlike the MEVA. You know, there's a few teams that are still in the hunt, A, to host and still able to get, you know, a top seed. And, you know, the next few weeks are going to really decide a few things. We got Harvard twice, who's above us in the rankings at second, and Penn State obviously at number one, but we play them twice. And, you know, we control our own destiny, which is where we want to be. And, you know, we're happy about having the opportunity to get after it again and get some good teams. So that's it for us in the EIBA.
Well, let's go to our final elephant in the room person. Big weekend, although split, is a huge weekend nonetheless at Steele Edwards and his CSUN Matadors. Can you talk about your weekend on the island, darkening up that bronze tan?
Yeah, I don't know about the tanning, but we definitely saw some really great volleyball. And Hawaii on the first night played incredibly well. I think they hit 388 on night one, and Guillermo Voss was absolutely electric. And for those who have played in Hawaii, I know Dan was there earlier this year, and that crowd is absolutely fantastic. They love volleyball so much. You know, we had a conversation about there was a gentleman who was sitting behind our bench starting, who every time we missed a serve in the net, he would yell, "How high is the net?" And the whole group around him would say, "Too high." And it was like this like ongoing theme. And at some point, him and I catch eyes, and he goes, "Oh yeah, coach, I'll be here all night." It was really entertaining. But that same guy at the end of night one comes over to the bench and says hello to our guys, and says how much he appreciates them and how hard we work, and just love, they have a love for the game. Like, the heckling is at full strength, but a love for the game nonetheless. But anyways, Luis for Hawaii had a fantastic weekend. You know, he's from France and one heck of an athlete, one heck of a volleyball player. And I think he has a really, really bright future ahead of him. Night two was a little bit different though. You know, it's always fun, the back-to-backs in the Big West. You get to see the adjustments, you get to see some things change. And especially in a setup like this, where we were kind of in the same place twice. The first night, the crowd played a huge role, and I think definitely spooked us a little bit, especially our younger players. Jalen Phillips was really off his game. I think he hit negative on night one, turned around, hit 355 on night two. So it was kind of a tale of two different nights. And after some adjustments, we were able to take him down, and it was a lot of fun. Some great volleyball.
Yep. Funny enough, on my website, I got a form submission from a Hawaii fan. Maybe it's the guy who's heckling you. He said, "Tell Theo Edwards" was the subject line. "That CSUN played a flawless match on Saturday. I was there probably heckling you. They could have beaten anyone in the country, UCLA, Long Beach State, Irvine, et cetera, and characteristically served really well, passed nails to negate UH's tough serves. But this is what I love. Constable distributed sets to multiple hitters, unlike Friday night when nearly everything went through Hobus." But essentially, he's just saying, you know, Constable was the unsung hero. Although Hobus had great nights, Phillips had a great night, your libero was, you know, standout performance too. But, you know, Constable definitely got some big blocks at the net, key, timely blocks, at least I felt when I was watching. So,
he was unbelievable. And it was probably the most balanced game that he's set, quite frankly, in his career. But he was absolutely a game changer. So I think that fan is spot on. And, you know, I think it's interesting, you know, you watch a ton of volleyball, and night one, Hobus and Griffin were kind of our two guys that were really capable and were playing at a pretty high level. They happen to also be the only two other guys on the floor that have played in that gym before. And so it was a little bit easier for them. Where night two, we had kind of got some comfort underneath us and started to play as a team. And Donovan recognized that and was able to run some different things and open some guys up. And man, he was really, really flowing out there. It was pretty awesome to see.
Yep. Well, gentlemen, I'd like to open it up to any of the conversation we've had so far, because I know that you guys have stuff to say.
Well, it's totally true, Theo. Like when we played that first night in Hawaii, and our guys are just like, why are there so many people yelling at us while we're trying to play volleyball? Do you know what I mean? It's and then our next two nights, the guys settle in and you get comfortable and you play. But I think at BYU can be like that too. You get to BYU, and if you've never been there before and you're trying to figure out, but there's a few places like that. Like you get to those gyms that maybe you're like, you go to Ball State for the first time, and if you haven't been there, the arena is so big, and you know, and so it takes a little bit of time to kind of get used to those things. And so I think that's why it's important for coaches to play so many different places, because it gets your kids a little bit more acclimated just to kind of different venues and how they might play in them and spacing and things like that. And so yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And on that, it's cool as coaches, because it's just different environments, right? From Hawaii to BYU to Ball State, they're three great atmospheres, but they're so different in how those atmospheres are created and what those fans are doing, or how they're chirping, or how they're talking, or how they're supporting, to where it's really opens a lot of our guys' eyes, especially being out here in Southern California where things are all pretty consistent. It opens your eyes to some different cultures and atmospheres in the audience. And then talking about Theo's match, I thought it was really interesting. Hawaii passed considerably better, at least statistically. They were more in system. And I think it speaks volumes to Constable's night as a setter when your team's not passing as well, but to be able to run an offense and have them hit, what, 375, 380 off of you, as opposed to Hawaii hitting around 200. You know, that ultimately falls on the setter, being able to be good in medium pass situations. And obviously knowing Northridge and Theo's team really well, you know, they're not striving to be perfect receivers. They're striving to not get ace and play lots of volleyball because they have so much physicality on the pins. You know, so being able to have a setter that can set from that medium pass and good pass range and run an offense at that rate is really impressive. And I thought that was obviously the difference.
Yep.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on all that, how fun is it this year for the average fan when you see a matchup, you don't know who's going to be the victor? I mean, you've seen it across the country, both in the Big West, in the Midwest, in the East Coast. You know, everybody is beating everybody at some point. And if you're the average fan, you can go to a match now and be able to have some hopes of having a pretty exciting match to watch, but you don't know who's going to be, you know, at the end, the victor. And I think that's kind of fun. So kudos to all the coaches and the players that are, you know, making it an exciting year. It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
On the flip side, Jay, as a coach, and you've been doing this a while too, you used to be able to walk into a match, one or two of them, and be like, we'll be okay. These guys are going to get you. I don't walk into any match anymore like that. Do you know what I mean? I'm just like, all right, every match, you got to have your guys geared and ready. Cause I think the level of play from the bottom is so much better than it was 5 or 10 years ago. And coach was doing great jobs, and you got to prepare for every team because you've got players on those teams that have arms and get after it and build a little confidence. And so,
yeah. And I think, you know, we've touched upon this over the years. It's because there are more good players, young players coming out of club, coming out of high school that can play at a high level, that don't want to sit in a program for 3 or 4 years and barely get a shot at sniffing the court. They want to go somewhere. They still can get a great education, but now they're getting a chance to play. They're getting a chance to make an impact. And, you know, you're seeing the fruits of all of those programs going out and finding these kids and giving them a shot. And I think that's pretty cool, because back in the day, you're right, there was maybe 5 teams that really were the ones, and everybody else was hoping to have a good night once in a while. And now everybody's having a shot, and there's nobody sitting safe. Nobody's sitting comfortably. Even Long Beach right now is looking at Northridge, looking at Irvine, and they're saying, yeah, we can't just rest our hopes on a couple of things. We got to hope that everything lines up and hope that those teams don't have a hot night. Because on the wrong night, Northridge could beat 2 teams in a row and make it to the finals of the Big West. And next thing you know, Northridge has got the bid, And there's other teams now on the outside going, well, wait a minute here. What, this just completely threw a monkey wrench into everything. So, yeah, it's fun for sure.
Well, I look at a couple of years ago in the Big West tournament where a UC San Diego team came in and really messed things up. But that's just the level of play that's going on around the nation. So.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the nature of the sport. And really, you know, you watch the evolution of every sport has gone through this. You know, there was a time in men's basketball when UCLA was walking into the finals of the national championship every year. And there was a time in men's volleyball where UCLA was walking into the finals every single year. But now we see in March Madness, and we see it across our sport, where you can have a 16th ranked, a 17th ranked, an 18th ranked team come in and upset the entire thing. And that's why, you know, all of the coaches on this panel, including Rob, are constantly pushing for a tournament and the opportunity to see some really exciting things take place at the end of our season, similar to what we see in March Madness. Because the joy of what that tournament brings, March Madness in itself, it captures fans for college basketball every year. And if you can get that in our sport, you capture more and more fans and more interest and more sponsorships for men's volleyball.
Yeah. Anything else, gentlemen? We've got our topics that I think Dan's actually touched on one of them. Starting on the March 20th, Lindenwood upset of number 18, McKendree. Thoughts on that matchup? I was like, whoa, what happened there? After we
I'm not low what happened at all, because I was on the wrong side of AJ going off on us. Do you know what I mean? I think Lindenwood has these tools that they're not a team. They got hot. If they got hot in the tournament and they end up being whatever seed they are, you're not sure you want to face them right away, because they're capable of serving and attacking a high rate. Connor Sheehan runs a really nice offense. If you go look at the stats, I think he's probably leading the conference, if not second, in assists per game. And he's got a couple weapons there that he can use at any given time. And so, I think you see McKendree, I think maybe a little bit more surprises. McKendree's been so consistent about how they're playing, but I think they were coming off a tough road loss to Loyola, and that was a home win for Lindenwood in terms of that. So, but not surprised, you know, in terms of just the result.
That match is interesting because both teams had under 200, like from a hitting efficiency perspective. It wasn't the cleanest match. Lots of errors, lots of blocks. And really, AJ Lewis, although he got 40-something swings, 30-something swings, he wasn't super productive. It was Wetter, I'm probably butchering that, who got a ton of their swings and had a lot of production from the end line and offensively to kind of make that difference. And he was really, at least from the Lindenwood perspective, the most efficient attacker and the most consistent attacker.
Yeah, it's a three-set sweep, but that second set, 32-30, you know that team was grinding out. That was the backbreaker for McKendree after losing the extended set. But, you know, looking at the productivity, you know, they only had, well, I say only 15 kills, but, you know, these guys were performing at a higher clip, getting more kills than that through the season. That's A.J. Lewis, who Dan referenced, that Connor Sheehan has been on the radar as running that offense pretty well for Lindenwood. So anything else on that first, we'll call it the shocking result upset or the eye-catching upset. So if not, we're going to go to our next one, which is the number 10, Ohio State, taking on MEVA leading number 12, Ball State 3-1. Who wants to chime in first on that one?
Well, you had, Pastor wasn't playing and they still did that. I think that's the line for me that rings true. You know, they're Ohio State, Shane Wetzel, you know, kid had a match, had 15 kills and hit 455. It's pretty good. But again, it's not dominating teams walking over everybody. It's everybody at any given night can, you know, spark a little magic. And these guys, you know, Ohio State may be a well-recognized team, and they've had some losses this year that maybe some people have said, well, that's not traditionally what happens. But, you know, Ball State was leading the charge right now, and all of a sudden Ohio State comes in, sweeps them in three. That's, you know, to me, I think without Pastor, What do they do with Bestor? Can you sweep them in less than three? No. But can you hit at a higher clip? Maybe. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Ohio State does down the line with both Michael Wright and Pastor back in the lineup together.
Yeah.
I think my ad, it's like, but the Ohio State played well, so they get the win. You got Shane Wetzel, though, I think super talented, but if you look at his numbers for the season, he's kind of had an up and down year. It's kind of like A.J. Lewis. Like, he's gone in some games and been really good, and the other games not as good. And so you see two guys who are certainly all-conference guys that maybe aren't as consistent when you look at across the board, and I think that impacts their team sometimes when you always have a guy or two lean on. I talk about Hobus at Northridge. Like, if Hobus has an off night, who's picking up the slack for him? Or for us, like Max, if he has an off night, or Jay's got Omar, if he's got an off night. And those are tough shoes to fill sometimes. I think we're seeing it with Hawaii and Spiros. You know what I mean? They missed the main production guy. And so I think Wetzel is even a little bit better. They had Wetzel and Pastor. When those two guys are both on, I mean, Ohio State is certainly one of the best teams in the country. Do you know what I mean? In terms of that, those two guys are pretty dominant. And I think you look at Ball State, you know, between the combination of T and Patrick Rogers, those two guys, if they're both on, Ball State is a handful. But Rogers rolled his ankle now, so that impacts them, and they've got a lot of young pieces, but super talented. I think the impressive thing with Ball State for me is how many young pieces they have, and they're winning league. I mean, they got a young setter. They got a freshman setter, a freshman opposite. Wow. They got a new libero. They've had some injuries in the middle. Buckholz is back in, and now they've got another middle that's been playing at some, you know, that was a freshman, Will. You know, and Patrick Rogers was a transfer. So you look at that team and what they've been able to do so far in league play has been pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing I thought was impressive. What's that?
Oh, I said, go ahead, Brad or Theo.
What I thought was so impressive was the way they won that match. I thought the setter, Noah Platfoot, was fantastic. Did some really, really nice things. And, you know, to beat a team 25-18, 25-16, 25-18 is really, really tough to do. And especially a team like that. I thought the service pressure was fantastic. And if we remember from last year, I think Shane Wetzel was very similar in the sense that he wasn't all that great early in the year. And then towards the back half, he really picked it up and played some really, really impressive volleyball. So looks like he's on track to do that again. And yeah, Ohio State is looks like they're humming and doing some really nice things this week.
Yep. Brad, any final thoughts?
No, I just think Ohio State's in a spot where it's like, all right, we're trying to get Pastor healthy / whatever those outsides, whether it's Tooney or Putnam or Hurley, just getting those outside some reps and opportunities to play and compete while still getting Pastor healthy and prepared for the MEVA tournament.
Yeah. Our next match of the week, or pair of matches, Malibu Mayhem, number 7 BYU at number 8 Pepperdine. 2-5 set frenzies, both tipping the BYU way. But I want to get your guys' thoughts because that's a tight, like, middle of the pack battle in the MPSF right now. So who wants to jump in?
I think for me, I got to watch night one, the last two sets, I think, something like that. And both nights ended up going 5, and it was quite the swings, whether it was the BYU serving sub a little, went on a pretty massive run one of the sets. He earned a point in the fifth set as well. But just all those sets were kind of out of reach for each team, whether it was BYU winning 25-20, Pepperdine winning 25-19, to where it was – very dependent on what team was able to serve in and serve effectively. Because I thought relatively all those other pieces with the middles and the pins were kind of very similar, whether it be BYU or Pepperdine's pins offensively. And I thought BYU's middles were a little better at the net blocking wise. Julian and I forget the other middle's name off the top of my head, but Teon Taylor, he's become a pretty darn good blocker, especially when they're serving and getting teams off the net. But yeah, I mean, to me, I think that sets up BYU to be in the driver's seat, to be in that third spot if they can keep taking care of business in the MPSF playoffs, which is a really, you know, obviously you'd rather be 1 or 2, but being 3 is a heck of a lot better than being in that 4 or 5 match, which is kind of looking like it's going to be a Pepperdine, Stanford, in that 4-5 match, and they've already split once this year, to where that's going to be quite the battle, where BYU will probably be drawn USC in that matchup, or what that would look like if things are all staying relatively the same. So I thought it was really big down the line when we're looking at what the standings are going to be like, having those two wins and fighting off a split there.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. The 60 assist night on that second match for Tyler. Like, you don't see 60 assist matches very often anymore. Do you know what I mean? And so, certainly I think, Capono and Mix were pretty steady both nights for them, but I don't know, pretty cool. Congrats to him. So running that show.
Yeah, 62 assists and 5 block assists while tacking on 10 digs. That's right. Great.
Yeah, I think it's I got to watch both matches. And I first of all comment on the fact that still get to see Marv Dunphy sitting in the back there watching the match and enjoying it. And it's pretty cool to see. Marv's an icon and a mentor of mine, and love seeing him doing well. But if you look at BYU, they've had some years now where they haven't had a setter come through the program from day one in the freshman year all the way through run the show. They've had a couple of transfers. They had Hughes from Grand Canyon that came in and set for a year or two. They got Herget, who transferred from Penn State, who's now running the show. And I wonder how much of that is, maybe lack of development in terms of the kids maybe not panning out the way that they thought they were, or these kids are just coming in going, hey, I'm ready to go right now, and they're hitting the ground running at a high level. And obviously I think that's the case, but it's pretty cool to see that, the kids that weren't getting a shot maybe somewhere else, or maybe weren't in a program that they felt they were getting, the reps that they needed, now all of a sudden they're stepping up and playing pretty well. Herget did a nice job. He's running a good offense.
Yep.
It seemed to me, so I watched both these matches as well, and it seemed to me that in both matches, there were points in each set where one team or the other gave up like a 4 or 5 point run, and it ended up being the difference in each one of those sets. And Brad commented on it that like all of the sets, for the most part, almost seemed unreachable for one team or another, because at the very end, there was a little bit of a gap lead. And it all stemmed from a run. And, men's volleyball is so unique in the sense that the side out percentages traditionally are pretty high. And if you give a team a cushion, right, a 5 point or a 6 point gap, sometimes it can be pretty difficult to make that up. And I also thought that BYU was really clutch in the fifth set in both of them. They went from offensively being good or above average to being like lights out. And I think on night two, I think BYU hit like 725 in the fifth set. I mean, it was like absolutely phenomenal. Where Pepperdine kind of stayed the same, the way that they had been all match. And so I thought BYU was pretty clutch down the stretch, and that ended up being the difference.
Yep. Final, actually there's two. The March 23rd, number 20 McHenry on the bounce back win that Dan alluded to. 3-0 over Loyola, which kind of a shocker because they've got Dan Mangan back and they've been pretty playing really well up until I saw that match. But thoughts on what happened there, Dan? We'll start with you.
Well, somebody said Vinny jinxed him, because he wrote all these great things. So it's all Vinny's fault, I guess. So from that standpoint. Anyway, I just McHenry's playing tough. Like, they're consistent. You saw them get back at home, settle in, and they dig a lot of balls and really extend rallies, and then they serve the ball on you consistently and just bring a ton of pressure. And they force you to side out, so they make it tough on you on those two fronts from the defensive side in terms of that. I think the interesting piece is that Wilson's out and been out, and I don't think he's playing again. He was one of their main outsides in the beginning part of the year, and so – and then even Nathan Flattery had to step in and set in game three because Tyler Polson rolled his ankle. And so they're doing some of these things, with some moving pieces as well. But the guy that I want to talk about is Shuley. Like, he probably won't get it, but he might be player of the year in our conference. And it's just because if you watch that team and the way he plays, he's leading the conference in digs per game. And he might be top five in the country in digs per game. And he's so steady, serves so well, and is hitting so consistently. And he's got his team playing at such a high level. I don't know if everybody will recognize that, but he's tough. And you just watch him, and he's a 6'3", 6'4", outside. It just brings it every single night, and he's gritty. And so I'm pretty impressed with him just in terms of what he's doing for that group.
All right, other guys chime in on the McCandry Loyola match.
Yeah, I mean, the MIVA, right, it stands for Midwest Intercollegiate, right?
Yeah.
Yes. I think that I just found out that they're changing it to Murder Intercollegiate Volleyball Association, because this is ridiculous what's happening in this conference. And we talked about it in the beginning of the year. We knew this was going to be the case. But this conference is so freaking exciting in the way that you have no clue. And before I even go into that match, Lindenwood almost got swept by Quincy. did we talk about that? They were down 0-2 at Quincy and ended up having to complete the comeback to beat them in 5, 15-13 in the fifth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just absolutely crazy what has taken place, and especially this week, but it almost feels like every week we're talking about how ridiculous this conference is. But yeah, McKendree is one of those teams that, and Dan kind of hit it on the head. They are so gritty and they work so damn hard. And Nikki does such a tremendous job at getting athletes who maybe they fly underneath the radar a little bit. But they heart and soul are guys that want to compete and want to play incredibly hard for her, want to play incredibly hard for that team. And you see it. I mean, when they show up and they play well, they're capable of beating anybody in that conference. And you know, I think going back to what Jay had alluded on earlier, it's going to be really interesting to see how the MIVA plant pans out and where McKendree ends up, because that's not a team you want to play at the end of the year. That is absolutely not a team that you want to play. And as we all look across the country, I mean, McKendree is one of those teams that you would not be shocked if they are in the dance at the end of the year.
The MIVA right now, you have the traditional Loyola, Ball State, Ohio State at the top. If you overlook Purdue, Lindenwood, McKendree, Lewis, you are dumb. Because that is an absolute nightmare of a playoff schedule. Somebody is going into that place and they're not walking out unscathed. I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised if you see a team that nobody expected to win the MIVA, a team that nobody expected to win the Big West, potentially a team to beat UCLA in the MPSF finals. And you might see something happen out east that nobody's preparing for. There are good teams in all conferences, and nobody is safe. It's going to be a fun year. And in a few weeks, we might have some really fun conversations.
Well, Dan already predicted McKendree winning the MIVA last week, so he's already on. I just think it's so interesting. You know, last week, McKendree and Loyola play, and Loyola sweeps them. This past week, they play, and McKendree sweeps them. And I think, you know, the difference, Parker Van Buren gets held to much more reasonable numbers in that second match they had. And that's a big difference. And similar to what you guys were talking about with Wetzel, if Parker Van Buren's not killing the ball the way he normally does, or serving or blocking the way he normally does, it's really tough for Loyola to figure out how to win around that. You know, they've proven they could still do it, but it makes it a lot harder. And that's when teams can really jump on you and pounce on you and catch you off guard. But yeah, I think McKendree's definitely going to be, as they get healthier and healthier, they're going to continue having more and more of these results.
Yep. Well, that, you know, with that, it's like it was a final topic in this segment we're in, but I'm going to have a transition into our conference standings, because I don't want to avoid talking about GCU and the Lopes, former number one, but they lead the MPSF. They come off a week defeating CUI twice. Sorry, Jay, alma mater. But you know, they're 8-0 in the MPSF, and there's probably 2 or 3 weeks of conference play remaining, depending on which conference you're in. But GCU can't ignore them. So I want to get your thoughts on how they're performing after that weekend in Hawaii. I believe that was the previous matches they've had in that at the Outrigger. But go ahead and chime on in.
They're dangerous. They're really dangerous. And I know they went out to Hawaii and maybe didn't get the results they want, but it wasn't like the teams they played were bad. And it wasn't like the other teams were not unscathed. Grand Canyon, sometimes a loss is a good loss. It didn't hurt them in the MPSF standings. They learned a little bit about themselves. I guarantee you they're retooling and fine-tuning some little small things here and there. But April 4th and 5th, or 5th and 6th, when they go out to UCLA, that's the match to watch, both matches, because that is going to be an absolute battle of behemoths. And, you know, Grand Canyon, I suspect, will split that weekend. That's my guess.
Ooh.
And I think the big piece with them, MPSF, so Grand Canyon's 8-0. They have four more conference matches. And they have the tiebreaker with BYU. So they're clinched the one or the two in that conference, which is huge. Because one, I believe you get hosted, or no, I think it's at USC.
It's at USC.
But one, you get a bye. And then two, you end up playing that seven seed, which is looking like it's going to be Concordia. And they just played really well against them. And I think with what Grand Canyon does with serving inconsistently and being really effective offensively and balanced, it's a really good matchup there. So I think they're in a really good spot to, you know, prepare to finish the season out strong and really finish on a high note, as opposed to last year where they were kind of sputtering their way through the end of the season. I think everything's kind of aligned for them to be in a great spot to whether it be win the MPSF tournament or get that one of the at-large spots and put themselves in great contention there.
Yeah.
Hey, does the MPSF, you said it's at USC, right, the conference tournament?
Yes.
So do they vote on it or bid for it? I know the Big West bid for it, like teams bid for it and Hawaii got it. How does that work for the
– They rotate it. It goes to each different place every year.
Yeah, I always wonder about that. Like, I think we play these regular season games and you're trying to certainly your seed, but I think the opportunity to host, if you're taking care of stuff, is a big deal. You know what I mean? I think you're going to see the MIVA tournament's different because now instead of the 2-3 being at 2's place, now the 2-3 is going to be at 1's place. So it's going to play like if for some reason, I'm not saying, but say McKinney was at home or Loyola's at home playing against the 3 seed or something like that, that makes a real bit of difference than playing at a neutral site. So I just, interesting on that format. I get the Big West because there's some TV rights and money being made. But on the MPSF, I don't know if that's the same thing.
Outrigger Resorts and the Hawaiian Tourism Association like to throw that money at the tournament. So.
But I do think GCU, I think GCU is playing better volleyball. I think it's exactly why you do what Worley did. You go play a tough tournament. You might take a loss or two. Your team learns a lot about themselves. They figure out where the pieces are and how to take the steps forward. And that could play dividends for them down the road. Just in terms of that, we might've been looking at them and, oh no, panic button. But I don't think good coaches look at it like that. You look at it, all right, how do we reset and how do we move a couple pieces or how do we make sure we get a little bit better in these areas so that when we get to these matches, we're ready to go. So,
yeah. Anything else? On
and they're 20-2. So, yeah.
So there's that.
That's all. Well, right there, close behind, might as well go into the Big West. Long Beach State, Idol this week, 18-1. So, you know, there's beginning to get some separation there. They're 4-0 in conference play. But again, that's only two teams in conference because of the small conference. And with the way teams have been traditionally in the past, the Big West, it's like, you can't really say anything about conference play because it's going to come down to the tournament at the Big West Championships. I've been told you have to call it at the end of the year because anyone can come in, especially seeing the parity within this last year of play. So, you know, you got Long Beach at 18-1, 4-0 in conference, Irvine 4-0, 15-6 overall, then right behind UC San Diego and Hawaii in those next two spots, and then rounding out with CSUN and UCSB. So, what do we see in conference play in the Big West? We'll have the two guys, Big West, take the lead on that one.
Yeah, all I see is we got to figure out a way to stop Long Beach State this week. That's where I'm at with the conference play. That's the only thing I'm thinking about.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you know, it's interesting. You look at the Big West right now, and I don't know that we've seen a number two team, not only, but you know, Hawaii being in the bottom half of the group as they stand currently. In addition to that, San Diego's one or two wins away from leading the conference. And so, you know, you look at what Brad has this matchup right now. I mean, if he finds a way to not only maybe split, but if he can take both from Long Beach, he's in the driver's seat and San Diego's leading the charge. I think it's really interesting. It's really, really interesting year. And it's going to be interesting how it shakes out. But at the end of the day, Rob, you're spot on, right? The what really matters is that Big West championship. All six teams make it, and you're two or three wins away from an automatic bid.
Yeah. And you look at teams that have played at Hawaii already this year that have a little bit of experience of that gym, of that atmosphere. That's going to be a little bit more comforting than maybe a team that has not played at Hawaii this year that is now going into that tournament and it's one and done. So if you can't recover quickly or you can't figure out how it feels in that gym to play in that kind of environment, maybe you're playing against Hawaii, could be a little bit tough. But if you're a team that's been there, and I'm telling you right now, I'm not so sure that it's safe for anybody. Long Beach is probably the favorite. I'm going to give it to Long Beach there. There's nobody in my eyes right now that's a clear two. Nobody.
Yeah. Anything to end with there on the Big West conversation?
No, excited to see Brad win one. So.
And let me clarify that, because I know I'm going to get hate mail. Obviously, Irvine's a good team. But other teams are beating also very good teams. That's why nobody is a clear two. That's my.
Well, and let's talk about Santa Barbara's 0-5. Who wants to play them?
Nobody. Nobody.
That team is freaking good.
I volunteer the Matadors. Well, let's go over to Jay's conference. EIVA, you know, Penn State's obviously sticking up, but surprisingly, Harvard is near the top there. And Princeton on the bottom half, which, you know, with Ben Harrington and Nero Oumene, I mean, that's a good team on the bottom half of the conference, sir.
Well, bottom half is, you know, subjective. We're third place, just above Princeton and just below Harvard. Harvard is getting up to the meat of their schedule now with two matches against Penn State and then two matches against us. And then our final weekend is Penn State. The big thing for us is we got to get over the hurdle of Princeton this week. If we can get over that hurdle, that puts us in the driver's seat for the rest of the conference. If we lose that match, it makes it a little bit tougher to host. So we're going to need a little help from people, but you're fighting for, you know, the first three spots or last place, depending on how you look at it, because you don't want to play the number one seed in the semifinals. You want to play them in the finals if possible. So, but, you know, Harvard's a good team. They start out the year, you know, you kind of look at me, okay, it's Harvard. They got some nice pieces here and there. They're beating some good teams and they're playing well. I mean, I'm not overlooking them. I don't think anybody else in the conference is overlooking them. I know Princeton, I think Princeton lost to them one night, so that's going to be a little bit of a challenge. But, you know, it's fun to be a part of a conference that has some parity. And, yes, Penn State's still undefeated. So is UCLA. So is Grand Canyon. So there's teams everywhere that can beat anybody on any given night.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the EIVA, gentlemen?
I think seeing how the 2-3-4 shake out between Harvard, Mason, Princeton down this home stretch, I think it'll be interesting. I don't know how much it affects too much. When you get to the conference tournament, because you look at Charleston, if they get healthy, they could beat any one of those teams. I don't know where they're at there. And then NGIT was coming into the year where everyone had them pegged in the top half of the conference anyways. To where, yeah, they're 0-5 right now, but I think every single match has been pretty darn close for them, and they've played some really tough opponents so far.
NGIT is exactly like UC Santa Barbara. Nobody wants to face them because they're gonna figure it out at the right time, and the other team is gonna hiccup, and then next thing you know, you're out of the dance.
Yeah,
yeah. I looking at the EIVA. When we hosted Harvard earlier in this year, when they left the gym, I told my guys that team is damn good, and they're gonna be a problem for a lot of teams this season. And it was just a matter of time, right? Obviously, the back half of their season, they've really started to put some things together, and they're playing some really good ball. Charleston has dealt with a series of injuries, obviously, in that swing on the West Coast with Brad and myself and Santa Barbara. But I think if that team is healthy, the EIVA is looking a hell of a lot like the Big West in terms of everyone's can beat anybody, and you don't want to play anyone when it comes to conference time and conference tournament time. So yeah, the EIVA is really exciting, and Penn State's leading the pack, but I don't know that Penn State is the Penn State of late. I think that any one of these teams, including George Mason, could take down Penn State for sure.
Yeah. Well, I know we've spoken a lot about the MEVA already, but that scenario of having one first place team and seven second place teams and tiebreakers, it could potentially happen, because I'm looking at how tight it is in that little middle cluster of teams with only two weeks remaining for you guys.
Hey, Dan, question for you. I know every conference has a list of hierarchy in terms of, you know, how you break a tie, right? So you have like head to head, and then you're not against conference Mamba. Do you have coin flip as your last one?
I think so, but it's a ways down there.
Yeah, I think we have it as the last option. How gnarly would it be that somebody either hosting or traveling or not is based upon a coin flip?
Yeah, I hope that it doesn't get to that. Like, I probably not a good. I think we should at least go play a neutral site 15-point game or something. I don't know. Maybe the head coach versus the head coach. I'd do that with everybody in conference.
I'm all right with that.
Or cornhole or pickleball if the coaching staff.
Flip cup. Coach.
One of the things, right, I don't know if we talked about this, right, but you got to talk about Diedrich's 38 kills hitting 460. I mean, that's a career night for anybody this year. I don't think anybody's had 38 kills yet.
Yeah, I think they moved him over to the right side as well, which I think is a good move.
Pretty impressive. I know they lost the match, but
what did Heno have that one night?
He had 38, but he scored 40 points, and I think that was the most since in the rally, second most in the rally score era.
Yeah.
So he tacked on the two aces to get that 40, but I think maybe it's 37.
Diedrich had 41 and a half.
Whoa. Yeah, 41 and a half points.
And hit 466.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I don't normally do this, but he's going to be my player of the week.
Well, I guess so. We'll end the MEVA conference on the coin toss or beer game, pickleball, or.
If he's Brad's player of the week, then Dan has to get an assist for that. That he absolutely said.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Career high assist number one for Dan.
Nice.
Well, let's go.
We were talking about 60 assist nights. Their setter had 63. Now, I know it helps when John Diedrich has 38 kills, but that's a lot of assists. Again, you know what I mean? So.
Good week for Connor Sheehan then. He found the hot hand.
No, that was Andrew Polmak. He's a setter for Purdue Fort Wayne.
Oh.
Yeah. So like he's a freshman for those guys. I gotta go back and look, but yeah.
Wow.
So 63 assists. So it's pretty impressive.
Well, the other conferences that have the auto berths are Conference Carolina is leading the way there, are Belmont Abbey, 9-1 in the conference. Next closest team, Erskine, 7-3, tied with North Greenville. And then over in the SIAC, Fort Valley State's undefeated. Edward Waters sits in second, but closely behind them, Kentucky State at 4-2. So those are the other conferences to watch for. We'll see what pans out in the next few weeks here, because we are running out conference play and beginning to eye the light of the door of the conference tournaments is beginning to open up.
I'm going to mention it again. Somebody out there in volley world, make brackets for all of the conference to be our March Madness. I've even got it broken down for you. You could have the coastal bracket, which is the Big West. You could have the mountain bracket, which is the MPSF. You could have the Midwest bracket, which is the MEVA. You could have the Mid-Atlantic bracket, which is the EIVA. You could have the Southeastern bracket, which is Conference Carolinas, and the Southern bracket, which is the SIAC. Do it. There's 40 plus teams that are going to be in this. You could create a sheet We could put it up on somewhere, Volley Talk, and spread it across the land. ESPN Plus could pick it up as something that, we could talk about. It's going to be good. Put it up there. Somebody.
Rob, I want to make sure we give some love to the NEC. You saw St. Francis play Damon. That was to kind of lead league, and St. Francis, I believe, beat them twice, which was pretty huge. So so I think it's unfortunate. I think the NEC should be in the national tournament. I know they got to wait the end of this year, and it is what it is. But you'd be looking at one of those teams getting in, which would add to the bracket as well, and add another region in Jay's bracket. Yeah.
Right. Well, and they could be the Northeastern region, but there's talk now that the NEC might not get a bid next year.
What? Okay, Jay, you're going to break that kind of stuff here and we can't follow up on it?
I think it's absolutely disappointing. They've done their 2 years. I can't believe that wouldn't happen, but I heard rumors and I hope that's not true.
Oh, gosh. And because that was a conference where LIU, Damon, St. Francis,
they're all
good teams.
They're all deserving to get their shot. They paid their price. They waited their 2 years. They need to get that bid.
Ooh, we're going to have to look that up a little bit further, unless that's just on an e-entertainment or something. But, yeah, I'm hoping it's
I want to also touch on the SIAC real quick, too, and what Larry Rather's doing at Fort Valley, right? Because this past week, they swept Ed Waters, who is essentially the last year's conference champs. And they're 5-0 in conference, Fort Valley is, and they're playing some really great ball right now. So pretty excited for those guys. And shout out to Larry Rather, what he's been doing. Yeah.
Larry, are they hosting again the SIAC tournament? He did it last year, right?
They get a bid this year.
No, he meant hosting. Who's hosting the conference tournament? So
I don't know. I'm not sure.
That's homework for Theo. We'll let him figure it out by next week.
I'll find out.
Well, unless there's any other business, I wasn't going to a topic. We're already, 55 minutes into our episode here. So there were two that came out, and one we kind of touched on, but the effects of injuries this late in the season. And then do we love, and I love this term, I got it off of Instagram. Someone said, do we love the love shove, which we've talked about, the two-handed push, but I know we can go really long on Jay's face tells a story right there.
I think everybody loves the love shove when they get the point. But I'll tell you what I saw this weekend. I saw some Pepperdine refs calling the lifts against some of their teams and they're throwing it. I got to give those guys props. Finally, somebody's catching on and not letting that crap get away with it. Love it. Love it.
Well, we'll have that as a topic for next week then, but I wanted to get your players of the week as always, and then get your what you watching this upcoming weekend. Let's go with Dan first.
All right. I'm going to pick Northridge's whole starting crew getting a win on night two. I think that's pretty impressive. And
I already have that graphic because I put them as my upset minded this week.
Yeah. So I think, getting there, learning that environment and taking down Hawaii at their place, I think that's pretty impressive by that group. So they're my
pick. Did you get a Gatorade bath? I couldn't. There's your social showed, someone stalking your locker room. And
it was not a Gatorade bath. We go into the locker room, and I actually thought my team wasn't in there because it was so quiet. Like, I had finished up the interview with Spectrum Sports, and we go to walk in there, and I thought someone had died. I get around the corner, my whole team is like dead silent. Walk in, I'm like, hey, what the hell happened? And they had their regular water bottles that they like burst into like a celebration and were squirting each other and coaching staff. It was a good time.
Yeah. A similar thing like that happened to me at Irvine earlier this year. It was the highest ranked team that we had beaten.
Thanks, Jake.
How long?
Appreciate it.
And I walked into the locker room and my guys were sitting there kind of somber. And I'm like, did somebody die? Like, somebody fart? What happened? And next thing you know, the bath. So I can appreciate that. Maybe you and I should post those videos up together on Facebook somewhere and share
the love. The beauty of this day and age, right? The guys knowing that the coaching staff's coming in and who they are, right? They had already set up their cameras, and had it filmed. Yep. Yep. And so afterwards, I was like, oh, that was really cool. They're like, yeah, we got three different angles, coach. Oh, great.
That's pretty cool.
Well, you also had a birthday too that night.
Yeah, it was Jalen Phillips' birthday that night. And so it was kind of a celebration of a lot of different really cool things kind of come together at once.
Rob, I also need you to throw Theo's picture up with his team, because that's not just the guy. I need Theo in there too, just so you know. Do you
understand? I'll be sure to Photoshop that Pella Windows ad on top of the team too. did you get your play of the week pick there, Theo?
Are we doing matches or just player of the week?
Let's do player of the week, then we'll do matches. Okay, so go player of the week, Theo.
Oh, you want me to go? Yeah. I'm actually going Omar Hoyos. We didn't really talk about this, but the dude hit 563 and had 10 kills against Tusculum, which I thought was, look, if you can hit 563 in hitting lines, you're doing something right. So that's damn impressive by my book. The other one that I wanted to put in there was Shane Wetzel, right? We talked about him kind of coming to life, and that win over Ball State was absolutely huge. So hit 455 and had 7 digs, 16 points. Really nice match for that guy.
Yep. Let's go over to Brad. Player of the week. Oh, you got yours. Dietrich.
I got John Dietrich. Crazy thing. He had 50-something attempts. 73 attempts. Not even close. 73 attempts. 2 hitting errors. He got blocked a few other times, but 2 hitting errors on 70 attempts. Pretty unreal.
That's as we would say in the business, slightly above average.
All right, Jay, who's your player of the week?
I appreciate the nod for Omar. The cool thing is we had an alumni back from the early 2000s, Felix Campos, who came in on a surprise visit. His wife brought him up. Felix is number 10 on the all-time kills list, and Omar is nipping at his heels right now, and they're both obviously from Puerto Rico, and I thought that was pretty cool for them to see. I got 23 again. I'm going to give Griffin Walters a little love. 15 kills, hit 379 against Hawaii on the second night. We haven't been talking about him very much because he's not exactly the high flyer that Jalen Phillips is, and Hobus has been getting all love. But Griffin Walters gets salt of the earth. He's a blue-collar kind of guy. I like that. And I'm going to give the whole Lindenwood team a little bit of love. You guys are down 0-2 against Quincy. You come back to go to the fifth. You're down 10-13. And you said, not so fast, my friend, and end up taking the match 15-13. Good for you, Lindenwood. That's a good job by that team.
I got to find that.
Did you see Rob's reaction there? He's like, I'm running out of space on the graphic. I can't just throw every team on.
Two graphics, Rob. Two graphics then, buddy.
Do a whole collage of every team shot all around the whole page.
Well, I did a part one and part two of Upset Minded on Saturday night because there's only way to get the entire teams on there. So I'll just have to do the same. That brings us to our matches of the, what are you watching? What you watching in week 13? Yeah, that's right, 13. Let's go back to Theo.
Yeah, oh my gosh, there's so many good ones. I think I got to put in there the San Diego and Long Beach State. I think that's going to be a really interesting one. And I'm hoping that Long Beach State is overlooking San Diego. That San Diego team is playing some great ball. And I don't think finals ever affects those guys, obviously. So I think they're going to be just fine. And I'm predicting at least one upset win for San Diego.
Ooh.
So I'm throwing that out there. The other one that I think is going to be really good is Harvard-Penn State. So Those two teams, I think, are, you know, obviously very talented. And I think Harvard right now is playing some of the better ball that they've played this year. And so I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. Is that at Harvard or is that at Penn State? Does anybody know?
I think it's at Penn State.
At Penn State.
Yes, at Penn State.
At Penn State. Okay, so tough matchup for Harvard, but I think they got a shot.
Yep. Let's go to Dan. What you watching, Dan?
Well, I want to see CSUN and Irvine. You know, CSUN coming off a big win, and those guys, I think that'll be you play them twice, right?
Yep, home and away.
Yeah, so I think that'll be two big matches there, so it'll be exciting to watch. In our conference, there's a couple good ones. How does McKinley go to Ohio State? And then you got Lindenwood at Purdue-Fort Wayne. So I think those will be big. And then I think the one for me outside of that is it's kind of seeing Damon and how they respond. They play Long Island, so it's another NEC matchup. And how's that match go? And certainly two talented squads.
Yeah. Okay. Go over to Brad.
I agree. Ohio State McKendree will be interesting. And then Dan, Ball State versus the Cool Pilot guys will be a great one. Damon, Long Island, I had tagged. Interesting will be Stanford, UCLA. Seeing if Rotman can help lead Stanford in there. And I think Stanford's been off for 2 weeks or so. So hopefully they're healthy and they're ready to get after it. And then I think second place in the SIAC, Kentucky State versus Edward Waters. We mentioned Fort Valley State earlier. I think between Kentucky State or Edward Waters, that's one of those teams is going to have to try to take down the Fighting Larry Rathers, and it's going to be tough. But that'll be a match to set up second place in that conference.
Yeah. And then we'll close out with Jay.
We got Princeton coming up Saturday, so I'm absolutely going to be watching that. There are so many great matches. All these guys touched upon them all. I just want to give a shout out. Penn State lost a great icon to their volleyball program, Coach Tom Tate. He passed away a little while ago, and they're doing a little memorial to him on Saturday's match versus Harvard. So I want to give them a little love. Coach Tate was a good friend of mine, and obviously I got to work side by side with him for a number of years. He is a fantastic human. So sad to see him go. But here's where I'm really going to be watching: Santa Barbara, Hawaii. Santa Barbara is one of those teams that they have some moments where they can be really, really good. And Hawaii right now, I'm not going to say they're licking their wounds. They're not licking their wounds, but they're not the Hawaii they were 2 or 3 weeks ago before Spiros went down. Is Hawaii all of a sudden becoming mortal and now all of a sudden susceptible to just about anyone that can come in? And I don't mean that CSUN is just anyone. I'm just saying now people know they can be beaten. And so now all of a sudden there's this little bit of hesitation, a little bit of second guessing. But my absolute number one, sponsored by the 405 Freeways, Irvine Northridge. Come on. These two guys battling it out for the rights to be able to call themselves College Volleyball Weekly Champions. Come on.
CBW Bowl again.
CBW Bowl. It's outstanding. I can't wait to see that. And it should be a really, really good match, actually, with Northridge coming off a good win, building a little momentum. It'll be interesting to see if Irvine goes back to the 6-2, or if Darcy's back in the lineup, or is Flexen in the lineup again. So those will be interesting to see. At full strength, Irvine looks tough, but don't overlook CSUN. They're coming in hot.
Theo, no pressure, but we've all beat Rob.
I didn't.
Oh, I thought you did.
That Jay beat me first match of the season and had a celebration.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, are you guys at Ball State? Or are you guys?
We have them home twice.
Nice.
I would agree with you, but our road record's better than our home record. It's a really weird for me. That's never
those
been
ours. Every top 20 win we have is at USC, at Stanford, at Hawaii. So
first year I've been like that. Usually we maybe have a couple losses at home, but so we'll see.
Putting that up out in the parking lot, it'll be all right.
One of your picks was Santa Barbara, Hawaii. If that Santa Barbara team on night two against Long Beach State comes out, that is a gritty team.
Or that Santa Barbara team that beat UCLA earlier this year. Like they're a team that it's kind of hit or miss when you catch them, but whoa, they're dangerous.
And I just feel like with the way the weekends have gone, I have a feeling Hawaii's going to try and run a lot through Elekai Todd, who's been, he was on fire in the beginning of the season. He started spreading the offense out to Spiros Hawkins, but I think Charlie's going to call on him to step up, and I think he's going to answer the call. So with that, that is episode 13. We're looking at the final weeks of regular season and going to be eyeing the conference tournaments. That's from CSUN, Theo Edwards, from Lewis, Dan Friend, from UC San Diego, Brad Rostrader, and from George Mason, the Mighty Hossicks, Jay Hossick. So appreciate your time this week, gentlemen. Best of luck this week, except Theo. That's the famous Brad Rostrader star there. So good luck, gentlemen.
Thanks for listening to College Volleyball Weekly. Be sure to follow Rob Aspero at the Rob on the Mic on Instagram and at Rob on the Mic on Twitter.